Even little bears expect a good fright when they go out for treats on Halloween night.
Woo!
Again.
That's just a good fright.
It's a good fright. Welcome back to Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. I'm your host, Phil Gonzalez, and we've got another spooky book for you this week. It is the Berenstain Bears Trick or Treat from 1989. This one, last week we covered the Berenstain Bears and the Ghost of the Forest. We talked a lot about ghosts. We talked a lot about the history of the notion of being frightened by scary stories. We talked a lot about what kind of ghosts there are in the world and what hauntings represent and why we like being afraid and why we like telling scary stories. This book goes in a completely different direction. This is about not only the mechanics of trick-or-treating, it's about the notion of witches and the notion of being afraid of old women and the notion of the stranger and the neighborhood and the community and who is that behind those doors. It's the heart to me of trick-or-treating itself. And joining me to discuss these very themes once again, Twin Cities actor, writer, director, producer, dancer, choreographer, one of the founders of the Twin Cities Horror Fest, Aaron Shepherd.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
I am so happy to have you back here studio to talk about the Berenstain Bears. This book is really about Halloween.
Yes.
And it deals with witches.
Yes.
Which is what your performance
which
is all
what
about.
My show is about. Yeah. It's that kind of... Twin Cities Horror Fest show, which opens on October 28th, is called Book of Shadows. And if you're not familiar, a Book of Shadows is it's kind of like a witch's Bible. So it's it can be spells, it can be potions, it could be a diary, I guess, too. And so just that kind of idea of like this, I guess, token that goes with the witch.
What is the difference between a Book of Shadows and a grimoire?
Grimoire. You know what? I don't know if there's much of a difference. I should do my research on
basically the same thing.
On those things, yeah.
The same thing.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose I could have just called my show something totally different. but yeah, no, it's... I think they're probably... pretty much
like a collection
the same.
Of
yeah,
it's, spells and...
And that's kind of where you keep stuff. So, like, if you try something and it doesn't work, then you might make an adjustment to it, and that would be where you would keep... Yeah. All of your information. And so our show is a series of dances around different witch themes. And so there's like a witch doctor kind of voodoo type dance. There's something that goes around the Salem witch trials. There's one actually around the Evil Queen from Snow White. And so kind of getting at these different witch ideas. But the main theme then being witches is it's a very feminine sort of magic,
yeah.
I guess, that kind of like if you're persecuted or feel powerless, like what do you have to turn to but magic? At a certain point, that is what you do, is the thing that is unknown and scary, maybe to the patriarchy. I don't know.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Could be some of those elements at play.
Yes, yes. So, but yeah, getting at that kind of scary. And I think that kind of solitary woman, like,
yeah.
That's, I think, you know, this book is the thing that scares the cubs about the witch that they encounter.
There's a weird double standard with witches.
Yeah.
Because communities used to turn to the wise older woman for help, delivering children, with medicines, with, you know, like tricks and... the life hackers
potions.
Of their day.
Right, yes, yeah. The DIY experts.
But then as soon as something would go wrong, they were who would get
blamed.
So it's Halloween in time in Bear Country.
Yeah.
And everyone's getting prepped.
They are, yeah. Brother and sister are practicing in their costumes. So sister's a ballerina and brother is like kind of a dragon. It's almost like a Chinese dragon.
I was just
going
to say, like, it looks like a theatrical mask.
Right,
like
from yeah.
That you, like, it's representational. Yeah, it's because of the eyes. Like,
yes.
The way the eyes are drawn with, like, the...
The kind of crinkled eyebrow.
The worried almost expression
yeah.
on its face. Like, you would almost see these in, like, older wall art.
Yes,
depicting
yeah.
Depicting demons.
Yes, yes. That's exactly what it looks like. It's like a demon from, like, some sort of ancient
yeah.
story. And there's, like, a jutting of the lower jaw,
mm-hmm.
too, which kind of, I think that's what made it seem like a Chinese dragon.
And the curled
costume.
The curled fangs.
Yeah.
Like the teeth they sort of wrap around.
And I think it's interesting because they get really specific about, they bought the mask and then Mama made the rest of his costume, which I think is kind of like, I don't know if that's to encourage kids to do the homemade costume thing or
right.
to be okay with, like, you know, you can buy a piece of your costume but then get creative
it.
And build the rest of it. And then I appreciate that Sister Bear's ballerina costume is actually great for trick-or-treating. She's got long sleeves, long pants under her tutu, and so it's like very practical late October.
But no shoes still.
No shoes. Well, I mean, they're bears.
They are bears, but we've seen in the past that bears do wear toe shoes when they dance.
That's true.
It was pointed out.
So she was a real ballerina.
Yeah, I'm confused by her costume. I guess you don't want to walk around the neighborhood in
toe shoes, especially if you're worried about witches, because
is there a connection?
Well, no, I just mean, like, you can't run very fast
oh,
if you're trying to get away. And you'd, like, thunk around. So.
You would thunk around. So Brother Bear jumps out and tries to scare Mama, but of course she's not.
No, yeah, Mama's afraid. On
she
top
did
of
make
things.
The costume, after all.
Yeah.
And, oh, we're exploring the notion that this is the Cubs' first time trick-or-treating.
By themselves.
Sans adults.
Yeah.
Like, this is a rite of passage.
And this is a thing that I think, like, last time we were talking about movies and child, like, family films versus, and family entertainment versus, like, things that are made specifically for kids. I can't imagine at the age that Brother and Sister Bear are in this, that, like, if they were real live human children today, that they would ever be allowed to trick or treat by themselves with just, like, the neighborhood kids.
I don't remember going trick or treating with my parents.
Really?
I know I did.
Yeah.
Obviously. But my memories all start
after. Yeah.
And I had an older sister.
Uh huh.
And we would just go trick or treating with a group of kids.
Right.
But there were no parents around after a while.
Yeah.
And we went trick or treating like the bears in the dark.
Yo, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It wasn't, we didn't wait.
You
didn't
do the 5 p.m.
No,
like,
no. Like, and this was Texas I'm talking about. So you had to wait. Until it got dark, because this is South. So.
Yeah, I think I did the same thing where I went trick or treating after dark,
mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to remember when, because I was the older sister in my case, and so I do remember taking my brother and then going with some of our neighborhood friends, and so it was like me and another girl my age, and then her younger brother and sister, and my younger brother. And then sometimes, like, a random smattering of other kids. So I guess maybe it was strength in numbers. But, yeah, I feel like it wasn't until I was, like, junior high age where I was, like, wrapping up my being allowed to go trick-or-treating that I did it by myself or, you know, like, or with, you know, no adults waiting in the car or waiting at the end of the sidewalk. But it was always in the dark. And I think... like Freaks and Geeks, there's like a great Halloween episode.
Oh,
it's
right.
So tragic and beautiful and just heartbreaking. But they're out. They start out like right after school. It's light out and there's trick-or-treaters all over the place. And that kind of surprised me seeing it so
it must
bright.
Be, I don't know if it's regional, like if it's
yeah.
Because I know I have friends who are like, oh yeah, we always went during the day. Like as soon as school was let out, you went trick-or-treating. So I guess maybe it's a low, I don't.
Maybe.
No. Do you remember any of your costumes?
Yeah, actually, a friend of mine and I, we decided to be witches one year. So speaking of witches, and then we made this big cardboard cauldron. And so what we would do is we would go to the house and then hide behind the cauldron and blow bubbles
from the wait, wait, at each house?
Yes, because wow, we were like, well, dedication. Like we felt like we needed to pay for our candy, you know,
you
like
really
we
did.
Were like, we're going to do a trick, which is us hiding in this like behind this cardboard cauldron and blow bubbles so that you think that we're like as potion and then jump out and say trick or treat and then get some candy and... but yeah, and then one year I went with a bunch of friends and we were a Monopoly game. Mm-hmm. And so I went as the top hat. And so my dad helped me make a top hat costume out of a poster board sprayed silver. And then I like put silver makeup on my face, mm-hmm. and sprayed my hair silver. And that was really funny, like because people could not tell what I was like when I was with the rest of the Monopoly game. So like,
yeah,
my friend Kyle was the Monopoly board and
oh, wow.
one of our friends was a dice or a die, I guess, if it's just singular. And then another friend was like the boardwalk cards.
Uh-huh.
And then I was like the top hat piece was
of
my
all
favorite
the piece. That was your favorite piece? It was
my favorite piece.
You always wanted to be the top
yeah,
hat?
Yeah. I wow. mean, it's just the showbiz in
I
me,
guess
I guess.
I guess there's one out there. I guess there's one for everyone.
But it was so funny because like people thought, one woman thought I was a stovepipe.
Of course.
Which I was like, what? And then another person thought I was a ballerina, which I don't know if it was because of the like brim of the top hat stuck
Are you
out.
A ballerina?
Yeah.
Have you ever like, seen a ballerina? No,
no.
I don't even know what it's supposed to be.
And then they would get confused by my costume because I couldn't wrap my arms around because they were just sticking out of like the holes in the poster board that made my top hat. And so I would try to like swing my bag over for them to put candy in, but they would just instead stick it in the between me and the poster board.
Oh,
so then it would just
what?
Fall down to the ground. And then I couldn't figure out how to pick it up because
I think you single-handedly designed the worst costume.
It was pretty bad.
But Halloween is a weird, it's a social contract.
Right.
That we like have agreed on as adults and children. Like this one night a year when it is ostensibly safe to go out and roam the neighborhood.
Right.
And I mean, you know, people can get cynical about it and be like, that's time we let kids go begging door to door. But it really is. Like it's very commercialized, but it's also very ancient feeling.
Yes,
like,
yeah. Well, and that I think that sanctioned practice of pretend, like
yes.
now you're allowed to pretend. Like, you know, maybe, you know, your parents get frustrated with you if you're playing pretend all the time or like running around with swords or your cape or whatever. But this is the time when you're encouraged to do that.
Yeah.
And just be whatever you're dressed as.
Well, and in America especially, like we have Halloween and Christmas are kind of our two like tent pole holidays. We think of them that way because they have this like commercial aspect of
sure.
them, where you can buy candy and costumes or presents and stuff. But when you look internationally at like the Halloween traditions and the Christmas traditions, there's a real blending of anarchy and chaos.
Yeah.
And like, because not in America, but in other countries, you see like Christmas-y traditions are born out of these very like public celebrations that involve like a lot of like dressing up in costumes and running
yeah.
around. You see like with the Krampus in like your Scandinavian countries,
yeah.
like dressing up as monsters and scaring.
Yes.
There's a lot of like the scaring and the terrorizing of the sanctioned terrorizing of the neighborhood
right, yeah.
that is also present in kind of in Halloween. And there's a real blending of traditions. And I think a lot of that comes from this like the world is getting darker.
Yeah.
Like, now autumn is here where
right.
there's less light. It's getting colder and let's go outside and just shout at the darkness.
Yeah.
Let's say like we are alive and
we are part of this too.
We're part of this too. You cannot overtake us. We're not going to succumb to the despair of
winter.
Of winter.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that so many of our winter traditions, of our fall traditions, are born of this like, we have vitality and energy and we're here and we're going to light fires and we're
yes.
going to dress up and be nuts and yell and scream and dance and we'll go door to door because we're not afraid of being outside at night because we're more powerful than the
right.
dark.
Yeah.
And I think we forget that there is
yeah.
a raw, vital quality of like just running through the dark in costumes and masks and saying like,
right.
we're scarier than anything that you can throw at us.
Yes, yeah.
And we give that to the kids. We say, go do that, children. Like,
yep.
be scary. Like, we'll sit at home and watch TV.
Right.
And hand out candy. But we're all part of it.
Yeah.
Like, the community is part of that. Like,
yeah.
We agree that you're allowed to do that.
Yeah. Well, and there's not a question. Like, if your doorbell gets rung, on Halloween night, you're not like, well, who could that be?
Oh, yeah. What's going on?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, even if you don't participate, like, it is a societal understanding of, like, this is what's happening, whether you participate or not. And it's going to be this night of revelry in whatever way it takes shape. And I think it kind of gets at that excitement of the dark, like the unknown mm-hmm. is out there. Like, you get dressed up to be scarier than the things that you will encounter.
Yes.
But then there's also that, like, you can't see what you can't see. And so what is really out there
yes.
and that anticipation, even of, like, waiting for a door to open and, like, what the inside of someone's house looks like. I remember that when I was trick-or-treating, like, being a very exciting thing, like, at the neighborhood that I lived in. It was, like, really kind of, I guess, eclectic in the way, like, you know, you get those butterscotch buttons that are awful, or those, like, chewy peanut butter
things. Chewy peanut butter things.
And then, or, like, you know, there's one woman that would wrap pennies in tinfoil, and,
yes.
like, you're like, oh, thanks.
But you'd still unwrap them.
Absolutely, and count the pennies, and sometimes there'd be a dime in there, and, you know, you knew you made big. But then there was a house that, like, would let you in. Mm-hmm. They had like a split level entry, and so you'd go down into their little basement area and pick out a book. Like, they just had this
wow.
little, like, bookshelf. They were like, you can pick any book off this shelf. And then next door to that house was a house that would give you a full size can of pop and a full size candy bar.
Yes.
And that, you know, so those were the houses where you're like, I will put up with the tinfoil pennies
yes.
to get a book and a can of Coke and,
right
and a giant, you know, two Reese's peanut butter cups.
But it was special because
fun size.
You didn't get that stuff any other time of year. I think that we don't give our holidays enough credit for
yeah.
how important they are.
Yeah,
like, I know there's many people who would be like, just do away, get rid of it. They're just reasons for Target to sell more
right,
stuff.
Right, sure.
But I'm like, I think there's an importance there that kids recognize
yeah.
that we got to remember is part of not retreating into the dark,
yeah.
into our houses, into our brightly lit homes in the middle of winter.
Right.
It's part of saying, like, our doors are open.
Yeah.
It's cold outside. But for this night, we're going to give you some treats.
Right.
And send you on your way.
Yeah.
And the Cubs are getting ready.
To
segue back
yeah,
to the book.
Right.
The Cubs are getting ready to go on their way. They're getting together with Cousin Freddie, Lizzie Bruin, Queenie McBear, whom, for listeners out there, we just met Queenie McBear in the Berenstain Bears in the In Crowd. She just showed up in the neighborhood. So she is still a bit of an unknown presence. So brother and sister have mapped out their route, which I'm impressed by. Brother's
yeah.
literally drawn a map of the neighborhood.
It's pretty specific, too.
They mentioned the whole, like, there's Dr. Grizzly. She's into health snacks.
Yep.
But you have to go to be polite.
Like, yep. Which, you know, I think we all had those houses that give out raisins or dental floss.
You know what's funny, though, is we did have the houses that gave out dental floss and they gave out little mini toothbrushes.
Yeah.
We all groused about it, but the stuff in your trick-or-treat bag that wasn't candy was still novel. Like, you were like,
super exciting.
It's
yeah.
still kind of cool. Like,
yeah.
you got a thing. Like, as kids, you
it's
don't
like
always
a
get
present.
Things.
Yeah.
It's a present.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's lame, but it's still a present.
Right.
Even like the religious tracts, if you ever got like a house that gave you like a religious tract, like a Jack Chick
oh,
tract,
sure.
you're like, oh, that's lame, but it's cool because I still got this like scary comic book
right,
that the
yeah.
religious house gave me.
Right.
Like, that's nice. Like, it's trying to scare me. Like, thank you.
Yeah.
Happy Halloween.
Yeah. Right.
But there's one house they're not going to go to.
Oh, no.
Whose house is this?
I can't remember her name. It's on Crooked Lane, so you already know it sounds scary.
Ms. McGriz.
Ms. McGriz.
And they're definitely not going there, they say with a shiver, because
everyone knew better. Miss Grizz was a witch.
Yes.
For sure.
And Mama says that it's nonsense. She says, you know, I know that Ms. McGriz is old and bent and rather forbidding looking, but she's perfectly nice. Mama is in a weird, I think this is the tell that says Ms. McGriz is an intimidating presence in the community. She lives in an old house. It's a little run down.
It's got, yeah, well, and it's kind of twisty and curvy
mm-hmm.
in ways that are a little forbidding.
It's in a spooky old tree,
yes,
if I may
yep.
coin a phrase.
Grayer than the other trees.
And even the adults are like, yeah, we don't really know her that well. She's not, she's a nice person, but Yeah. She's a little on the edge there.
Right. Or I can see how you're terrified of her.
Right.
But, you know, don't be mean.
Oh, she's terrifying, but don't be afraid of
right.
her.
Right, yeah.
So the kids, their little group comes. There's a pirate, a skeleton, and the Wicked Queen from Snow White.
Snow White,
which
yeah.
Which is kind of cool.
Which I assume that's Queenie, that's being the Wicked Queen.
I think so, because she's taller, too.
Yeah.
But then they run into trouble.
Oh, man, Too Tall Grizzly and his gang.
Now, we've already run into Too Tall in previous books, and he is he's the town... I don't want to say he's the town bully.
But he's got a bulliness about him.
He's the town troublemaker.
Yeah.
He and his gang are definitely a gang. You can tell because they are dressed up as kids, street urchins from the 1930s.
Right. And they're not selling papes.
They are not. And make no mistake, they are not wearing costumes. They're only wearing masks.
Masks and a mustache.
And a mustache. These kids are dressed as they normally dress, in a whoopee cap, apple core hat. Like they're ready to give you what for and beg cigarettes often, yeah.
Yep.
But Too Tall and this gang, they kind of invite themselves to go along with the group.
Yeah, they're trying to get strength in numbers, I guess. But because you can tell they're up to no good, because then what they really want to do when they get to Ms. McGriz's house is teepee her house.
Yeah.
Which if you've ever been teepeed, that's a nightmare.
Not only
to get out of your trees.
Are they going to teepee the house? They maybe they will tie a few knots in her clothesline.
Oh, that's right.
And then maybe smear some honey on her broomstick.
So that she'll stick to it when she tries to fly.
No way. I've talked many times in the past about how the Berenstain's notion of the world tends to stay firmly set in the decades previous.
Right.
So their idea of a troubled kid, a kid causing trouble in the neighborhood, is toilet papering a house, which we did when I was a kid.
Yep.
That was a thing.
Yep, me too.
Tying knots in the clothesline and smearing honey on the broomstick. It's very quaint.
It is quaint. It's like, I mean, they're not even egging.
Right. It's annoying. If I had a clothesline and someone tied a few knots in it, that sounds like a lot of trouble, too, because you'd have to untie the clothesline. I don't understand how you do this. But they are, like Too Tall says, he's going to put the trick back in Trick or Treat.
Yeah.
And he's doing his part. Like, this is part of that contract.
Right.
There will be trouble in the neighborhood.
And and troublemakers like Too Tall. I mean, his name is Too Tall.
Yeah.
So you know he is just out to cause trouble.
Yes, he's grown too large.
Yep. Yeah.
He cannot be held back. He's too much for this neighborhood. He's too tall for this neighborhood. So Too Tall is used to trouble. He's used to causing trouble. It's quaint trouble. It's neighborhood trouble. I think this is part of Halloween, though. Is that we do give a little sanction to troublemakers.
Right.
They get in trouble if they're caught, but you kind of expect it.
And you kind of look out for it. And I remember, candy snatchers.
Yes.
You know, like when you're the bigger kids that would steal the candy buckets from the younger kids, just like do a run-by and grab their candy or push them down and grab their candy.
Or smashing jack-o'-lanterns.
Oh, yeah.
Like you'd find the jack-o'-lanterns.
It's heartbreaking.
And it's annoying and heartbreaking, but you understood. This is the... These kids weren't doing this other nights.
Right.
They were doing it this night because it's kind of part of what goes on.
Yep.
It's not cool if you're the target of it.
Right.
But it's kind of part of what goes on.
Well, and I think it's that kind of toying with being bad.
Yeah.
You know, like if this night is the one night that, like, if you do something and you get caught doing it, you might get in a little bit of trouble, but probably less trouble than you would if you were just like willy-nilly kicking over pumpkins.
If you were smashing stuff on people's... Like
egging a car.
Any other night of the
year. Yeah,
You're going to get in trouble, but...
But if it's on Halloween, then I feel like most adults, again, because of this unspoken contract we have, would be like, well, I get it. You wanted to do something naughty.
Right.
Don't do that again. That's mean. This is the consequence. But it's different than doing it on just any... random night.
Now the kids are a little hesitant about TPing this amazing looking house now that I look at it. There's somehow windows in a couple of the
branches
that aren't like they're
not connected to house,
right? Yeah, I guess you would just like open this and put a light inside it. Like maybe it's just like a tree version of it.
Yeah.
Again,
it is confusing.
Spatial relations in the bear country are very unusual when it comes to their houses. But before they can do anything, the door opens. There's a frightening figure of old Ms. McGriz, and she says,
"I'm ready for you."
Aha.
Ah. Which is a very witchy thing to say, because you can only assume that witches know what's coming towards them. Like they have like this extra sense of like, you know, their eyesight usually isn't very good, but they can hear, or there's like they have this other sense of knowing when children, specifically children, are there.
And when she does, and she it says she then led the terrified cubs into a cozy living room. Now, she didn't invite them in. She just led them in.
I do think it's fascinating that she gives them apples because of the wicked queen in Snow White, with apple being her vessel of choice for poison. Miss McGriz gives the cubs candied apples, you know, and of course, being a child of the 80s, we were told not to eat any homemade treats after, I don't know, 1987 or something, when everything was surely laced with coke.
Looking at it as a parent, you're like, no. But then I'm like, no, the kids are fine. Like, Ms. McGriz isn't going to poison these apples because where are they every kid knows where they got the apples.
Right.
Like, it's stupid. Like, you wouldn't, as if you were a killer, you wouldn't be like, I'm just going to kill every kid who comes through. Or even like, I've poisoned one of them because everyone knows where you got the apple from.
Right.
Like, they were all there. It is weird. The whole notion of bringing kids into your house.
Yeah.
Is, to me, I'm like, whoa, that's.
It's kind of jarring to
right.
see.
Right. Even though.
Again, I feel like I went into people's houses.
I went, especially as a group of kids.
Right, yeah.
But I went caroling in school. Like, we would get, as a little group of kids, we went around caroling, which is a very similar thing.
Yeah.
And was invited into people's houses. They'd be like, come on in. We were invited to houses and given cocoa. Like, we have hot cocoa waiting for you, carolers. Come in. And looking at it now, I'm like, what were we doing? On the other hand, I'm like, that's what you're supposed to do.
That's
why carolers went caroling. They went,
we're singing you a song,
begging
and now
door
give
to
us
door.
Some
like,
food and
give
drink.
Give us some food,
yeah.
please. We're singing you a nice song. Well, the kids come home. The cubs return home, laden with treats. And they say, like, we went to Ms. McGriz's. We got these awesome treats from Ms. McGriz. And Papa says, that scary old grouch puss that lives down Crooked Lane? And Mother's like, yep.
Crunch.
Takes my
this apple.
And Sister says,
you must try to remember, Papa, giving her apple a little lick. Appearances can be quite deceiving.
And Papa's like, yeah, whatever. That's like, they leave us there.
Like, he's like reading his paper.
He's reading his paper. He's already been like,
he's over it.
I wasn't trying to start a conversation.
I'm just throwing out grouch puss.
I just wanted to insult the old woman that lives down Crooked Lane.
Yeah.
Thanks for taking this and running with it, sis. But yeah, I know. I heard Mama.
Right.
I hear this all the time. I'm married to this woman.
Constantly, yeah.
But let's look at the notion of the old woman who lives down Crooked Lane.
By herself. Mm-hmm. She lives by herself, and she's older than, you know, you've seen.
Yes.
I think, you know, like, we had an old woman that lived in our neighborhood, and my brother and I would go out walking all the time because we had a lot of days, you know, in childhood.
Yeah.
You've got so many days. And so we'd walk around, and like, she had this like overgrown yard. There were like vines wrapped around fences. Like, she just had, there's just a lot of plants around, you know, a lot of foliage.
Yeah.
And she had this really, really long white hair, and she would just sometimes be out, but she would call out to us, and that would freak us out. specifically freak me out, because as the older sibling, I was responsible for my brother, and if he sucked into this house, it was going to be on me. So I'd be like, Ryan, stay back. That's a witch. But she would call out, and she'd be like, hello, children. And there was just something about calling us children, which of course we were.
Yeah.
And there were two of us, so we are plural, and we're opposite gender. So she's not going to call us boys or girls. Mm-hmm. So it was but just that children, like, it made me think of Hansel and Gretel. And maybe because we were brother and sister, I was just like, we are not going to fall for it. Like,
do you think she was leaning into it?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I like looking back on it, I'm like, I bet it was kind of a thrill. Like, maybe it was like kind of sad to her that we would just like kind of run, but maybe it became kind of a game as well. Like, so then whenever she sees kids, then just kind of like play into that. Yeah, sure. If you think I'm a witch, I'll be a witch.
Well, it's funny because, you know, we talk about the notion of the old woman, the crone.
Yes.
If you were looking at it from a purely like a academic standpoint,
sure.
That's what we refer to, like the notion of the crone, the old woman who contains all the wisdom.
Yep.
But also we're also afraid of her.
Yeah.
And we need her, but we fear her. We created her by shunning her, but we are suspicious of the fact that she lives alone.
Right.
Like, we don't want her to live near us, but we also wonder why she's living by herself.
Right.
She lives in this horrible catch-22. And I like to think that as a society, speaking purely as an American society, that we are kinder and more understanding about our older citizens, older female isolated citizens. But I don't think we are.
No, I don't
think
so.
I think that there is still a suspicion. I mean, we have an old woman who lives down the lane. She lives at the end of our alley.
Yeah.
And she's eccentric.
Yep.
She is, I don't know if she is a hoarder, but she is definitely a collector of,
right.
of various
something.
Items.
Yeah.
We don't know what's going on in that house of hers, but she drives around the neighborhood in an old car and gathers junk and brings it back to her house. Like, we don't understand what's happening.
Right.
We would never go up to her and go, what's going on?
Right.
Like, why are you,
or express concern
right.
for her well-being.
There is this notion that she knows what she's doing.
Like, right. She's got a plan.
She's got something going
she's
on.
She's gathering something for a spell.
Probably, probably beyond us.
Yeah.
And I do think that we are still guilty of, obviously there's like so many like societal issues going on, the way we treat seniors, the way we think of, the isolation of the elderly, the
solitary people.
Yes.
In general, I think are distrusted because they don't, maybe because they don't seem to need other people. And so then the reaction is like, well, if you don't need us, then we will create this like legend around you.
And it is prevalent enough that you can find this plot in almost every children's book series. Yeah. The old woman, we're going trick-or-treating. Is she a witch? She's not a witch.
Right.
She's just a nice
She's
old woman.
She's actually really nice and gave us the best treat of the night.
I think it's cliche, but it's also ingrained. Like, we get it. Get it. And it's horribly unfair, but it's common.
Yeah.
Like, Mama and Papa say, like, this is a creepy old woman. Like,
right.
We acknowledge. They certainly never took the kids to meet.
No, and they take them to meet all of the new neighbors,
right,
and
right,
old
right.
neighbors and
But the
friends
kids have never been introduced to Ms. McGriz.
Right.
They don't know her.
Well, and it's that kind of thing of, you know, like you mentioned, midwives, or they were like the town storyteller, mm-hmm. or they somehow assisted throughout the lifespan, you know, so like bringing a baby into the world and then raising that
right.
child, like they were the village that it takes a village to raise a child. So they are the other pieces of that puzzle. But then why is she alone? Mm-hmm. What is she doing? How does she know that this particular concoction cures your sickness? And if this particular concoction made this kid sicker, then she must have done that on purpose. Or, you know, like it's that kind of like you said, like she is revered until she's not, and
right.
she is useful until she's not. And then it suddenly becomes like, oh, well, that must have been witchcraft, because surely a woman could not be capable of just being this truly. She is producing magic somehow. Or this kid can't be acting this bad or naughty or having a seizure or whatever. It must be that woman casting a spell or summoning the devil and having the devil speak through them. Or, you know, this idea of, like, I don't know, banishing what you don't understand, or mm-hmm. like punishing what you don't understand.
Well, and it's that local legends build up around like old mental asylums, or, you know, you always hear about, oh, there's a house where someone died, or there's a house where, you know, people used to live. Anything that's abnormal, like outside the ordinary,
right,
builds up this sort of like bizarre folkloric energy that doesn't dissipate easily.
Yeah.
Like we hang on to that. Do we need it like as a community? Do we need those outsiders? Like, is that?
I mean, I think so, because without those outsiders, then other people become outsiders. I mean, it's like, you know, popularity, I think, in high school. Like the people in the in crowd are constantly worried about no longer being in the in crowd. So they do all sorts of things to maintain their social status. Mm-hmm. Because as soon as there's no longer that poor geek to pick on, then
someone's going to fill that void.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's fascinating. We talked about last time, we talked about, you know, like in the dark, you build a fire to protect yourself.
Yeah.
And you create this intimacy.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, this is the people who choose not to live, or because we have forced them out, cannot live within that light that we have created. They are the ones who exist in the unknown. Therefore, whether or not we put them there, they have taken on the characteristics of the dark, of the unknown. And I just find that endlessly intriguing.
Yeah.
From a narrative standpoint, from a child standpoint, from a community standpoint, like these people that we seem to need to exist so that we can define
a moral ground,
a local ground, like where are our boundaries? Who's allowed to be in here? I don't know. And the Cubs learn the lesson. They learn it pretty clean.
Yeah, it's pretty swift. Yeah. They're distrustful, and then she brings them in. And then as soon as she's brought them in, they're like, oh, this is a normal house.
Yeah. And immediately that the whole veneer is just gone.
Right.
And will someone else fill the void?
I mean, I feel like they have to.
Yes.
Because that's too easy.
I think it's a cycle. Like, we will always have the people that, we will always have outsiders. Like, as long as there's an inside, I guess,
there's
always going to be an outside. It's not like, fair.
No, but it's that quest for happiness. Like, once you achieve a level of happiness, that becomes your new normal, right?
Yes.
And so then you become, like, not dissatisfied, but you need more.
Yes.
Like, that's kind of how drugs work, too. You know, like, it's just that kind of thing of, like, you know, what you're just constantly setting new norms. And so if the new norm is that Miss McGriz is accepted in society, and we learn more about her and we no longer fear her, we have that fear void. Like, there is something to be scared of then. And so what is it?
Yeah.
What is the new unknown? Because now we know her. So she's no longer this unknown thing. But if she starts acting weird, she'll be like suspect first, you know, if something weird happens.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't think that's a book that was ever written.
Yeah, Driven from Bear Country.
Like, the cattle start dying on Farmer Ben's farm.
Right.
And he's like, it was that Ms. McGriz.
Right.
Gotta do something about Ms. McGriz. But this book, actually, even though this is a more of a narrative story than Ghost of the Forest, this book, they seem to want you to think that the point of the book is don't be afraid of
things you don't know.
Your neighbors.
Yeah,
like,
right.
There's more going on under the surface. You can't judge people by their appearance. But they don't even deal with that until, like, the last quarter of the book.
Right.
Like, they fill you in on Halloween and everything. Like, this is sort of your all-purpose Halloween book. You know, I don't think it's as effective a book as The Berenstain Bears and The Ghost of the Forest, but it is appropriately Halloween-y.
Yeah, it's Halloween-y without being scary, which, you know, maybe for some kids that is the right thing. Like, Miss McGriz is a little bit scary, but not the way that The Ghost of the Forest scary times three.
Yeah, Ghost of the Forest was like, it's fun to get scared, but just realize that this stuff is all make-believe.
Right.
And this book is like, Halloween is a big deal.
And when it's your first time trick-or-treating without parents.
Right. Oh, God, I forgot about that theme. There's scary old people.
There's temptations of, you know, juvenile discord.
But also, like, yeah, they kind of dropped that. Like,
yeah.
Too tall doesn't
Which,
learn
a... you know, that's actually interesting. Like, your first time trick-or-treating without parents, you do suddenly have a lot more freedom.
Right.
You know, it's like when you move out of the house for the first time as a teenager, and you're like, oh, now I'm 18. I can, like, I'm the boss of me, and I live in my own apartment or dorm room or wherever. Like, I feel like that trick-or-treat, that's the trick-or-treat kid version of, like, oh, my parents aren't waiting for me at the end of the block. we don't even have to go trick-or-treating. Right, right. Like, we could do something else, like teepee a house and tie knots in the clothesline.
This is what I was talking about. I think it was off mic. The Berenstain's books have a tendency at times to introduce so many different ideas that they kind of get muddied. And this one, it's like, man, they could have gone with a book about, what if Ms. McGriz hadn't opened that door?
Right.
Would this have been a book about brother and sister, like, getting in trouble for sowing discord about the neighborhood?
Right, yeah.
But they never have to deal with that.
Right.
They never have to deal with the fact that they're all alone. They never have to deal with too tall, because it all just sort of goes out the window.
Right, yeah. They don't have to stand up to him because Ms. McGriz appears. And
like, did too tall then learn a lesson? Like, was he like, oh, I guess I shouldn't TP anyone's house? Like, there
because
could be
they're
nice
a real person.
Inside.
Yeah.
Like, we don't know.
Right.
Because he disappears. Like, they get their apples and then they're done.
Yep.
Like, you don't follow any of the rest of the Cubs home.
Nope.
So, yeah, it's muddy, but it doesn't do any harm. But as far as like the theme of also, I think it gives you a nice place to start talking about what is a witch.
Yeah.
You know, like, what do you think a witch is, kids? Like,
well, and is there a Miss McGriz in your neighborhood?
In your neighborhood, right. Is there anyone in this neighborhood that you think
that you're scared of? Or
right.
Or like a teacher, you know, in your school that is not your teacher, but like there was a teacher in my elementary school that was like terrifying, and she was missing like part of her finger, and she would like waggle that like finger stump in kids' faces.
Oh my
and
goodness.
And I think she was like leaning into her witch, like
right.
She knew what people thought of her. She was a little bit mean, and so I think that was her way of being like, all right, I know you're gonna make fun of this missing finger, and it was like her pointer finger. So she would just like knuckle in your face, and it's like she was terrifying. Like, she's my friend's teacher, and I just remember like riding on the bus home with my friend and just like hearing these horror stories of this teacher, which I'm sure she wasn't even nearly
I'm
that
sure
bad.
I'm sure the kids in her class were probably like, this is awesome. We can make up any story we want about this
right,
woman
yeah.
and scare all of our friends.
Yeah.
She's totally normal, but
she's fine. Yeah. But
she's
yeah.
probably like, kids, I'm going to start off first day of school by teaching you how to lean into something.
Right. Lean into your witch.
We're going to have fun this year. I think there's a lot of things you can start talking to kids about with these books, about trick-or-treating, about Halloween, about what's fun about it.
Appearances.
Yeah, because these are fun things to talk about with kids.
Yeah.
And they have ideas. Kids are smart, and they're observant, and they want to talk about stuff like this.
Yeah.
So gets a thumbs up from me.
And me too.
Awesome. Berenstain Bears, Trick or Treat. Erin, thank you for spending these last 2 weeks talking about scariness and Halloween.
I love both scariness and Halloween.
And you said at the beginning, but remind us again about the Twin Cities Horror Fest.
Yeah, Twin Cities Horror Festival. So it's a 11-day festival at the Southern Theater in Minneapolis, and there are 18 individual unique performances happening. Some of the shows have 5 performances, and then some are just one-off performances. But if you go to tchorrorfestival.com, you can find all the shows and all the information. My show is Book of Shadows, and it is about witches.
Awesome. And if they miss it this year, it'll probably be going on again next year with all new shows.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And so, check that out online. Check us out online at berensteinbearcast.wordpress.com. This is dropping. It should be on the weekend right before Halloween. So everyone go out and have a good Halloween time.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween, everyone. I'll be back soon with more Berenstain Bears fun and good times. Erin, thank you so much once again.
Thank you.
And we'll see everybody next week deep in bear country. Ha 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 ha!